Take it away.
Good morning. We move on to agenda paper 11. In November 2011, the committee received a submission from ESMA, so ESMA is okay to make it public, seeking clarification on the accounting for long-term supply contracts of raw materials when the purchaser of the raw material agrees to make prepayments to the supplier. The question is whether the purchaser or supplier should accrete interest on long-term prepayments by recognizing interest income or interest expense. The fact pattern submitted is summarized in the paper. We also present in the paper a simplified example to illustrate the impact of accretion of interest on long-term prepayments, both in the financial statements of the purchaser and the supplier. We have performed outreach with the national standard setters. From the 6 responses we received, it appears that there is mixed practice on this issue from one jurisdiction to another and also within each jurisdiction. However, respondents indicate that the prevalent practice is not to accrete interest. Mixed practice is especially observed in Europe, where 2 constituents confirm mixed practice and 1 constituent says that the prevalent practice is to accrete interest in its jurisdiction. In other regions of the world, prevalent practice is not to accrete interest. ESMA also confirms in its submission that there is diversity in the current practice. We present in the paper the factors supporting or against accretion of interest on long-term prepayments. There are 2 views developed in the paper. Those who support the accretion of interest in long-term prepayments refer to the core principle in IS 18 and IS 16. IS 18 specifies that revenue should be measured at fair value of the consideration receivable. IS 16 states that the cost of an item of PP&E is the cash price equivalent at the recognition date. So proponents of view A in the paper think that the principle is that when exchange of goods and cash occurs concurrently, there is no financing component. Accordingly, when a payment of cash is in advance or in arrears, there must be a financing component. So proponents of UA think that the purchaser should account for an interest income resulting in an increase of the cost of inventories, and the supplier should account for an interest expense resulting in an increase of revenues. With regard to the relevance of the information that is provided to the users of the financial statements, proponents of UA think that not reflecting this financing component would distort the financial statement and the assessment of the entity's performance when the impact is material. The other view in the paper, view B, proponents of this view note that prepayments are not financial instruments and that accreting interest on non-financial assets and liabilities would not be appropriate in that case. They think that these arrangements are generally entered into for operational reasons, not for financing reasons, for example, to secure the supply of materials or to fix the purchase price of the materials over a future period. Proponents of UB also think that these agreements can be viewed as being similar to operating leases, and that using IS 17 as a better analogy, no interest would be accreted on these long-term prepayments. We have assessed the submission against the committee's criteria. We outreach confirms that there is diversity in practice, mainly in Europe. In our view, consensus on the issue could be reached on a timely basis and within the confines of existing IFRSs. We support view A, developed in the paper, and we recommend to the committee to take the issue on its agenda with the objective to clarify that a financing component contained in a contract should be recognized when the impact is significant. However, we note that this issue relates at least partially to the revenue recognition project. We noted that according to the exposure draft, the entity should consider the time value of money, whether this, there is a prepayment or a deferred payment. We note that this, the standard that would be published, would not be effective before 2015, and that the requirements on time value of money would be applied retrospectively. So, in our view, it would be preferable if the accounting for the financing component is consistent between the purchaser's financial statements and the seller's financial statements. And given that this future standard on revenue recognition would affect the current practice, at least in Europe, we recommend to align the effective date of the clarifications to be made in the IFRS literature on the purchaser's accounting with the effective date of the future revenue standard. We also recommend using the guidance in the future standard, including the practical expedient that an entity does not need to reflect a financing component if the period between delivery and the cash payment is less than 1 year. So the question to the committee is the following. Does the committee agree to take the issue on its agenda with the objective to clarify that the financing component contained in the contract should be recognized when the impact is significant? Given the expected timing of the new standard on revenues, does the committee agree to align the effective date of the clarifications to be made in the IFRS literature with the effective date of the new revenue standard? And does the committee agree that the clarification should focus on the purchaser's accounting?
Ruth?
I agree with VA. I agree with your recommendation to clarify and to align with the revenue standard. It would have regard to the fact that there is a lack of consistency in practice, and it would give people time to make the necessary changes. But I think view A is the right view and actually should be applied now. But I can see what you're trying to do by aligning it with the revenue standard, so I would support that. So I agree with all of your recommendations.
Okay, I have Luca, Guido, Joanna, Scott, and Andrew. Luca?
I have a different perspective. I'm more for view B, exactly for the reasons indicated in the paper, because I do not see many chances to recognize those financial items looking at the present standards that we have in place. There are two elements that I would like to underline. When I read the submission, it seems to me that the submission underlined the fact that the materials has a quoted market price. On the contrary, in the staff agenda paper, this element has not been underlined. I don't know if your view is the same if you are looking at raw materials that has a quoted market price or not. It's absolutely the same.
Yeah, it's the same view. It does not.
Because in my opinion, these elements could be a difference. And the other element that I would like, you quote also the items related to take or pay contracts. And from my experience, and we have a lot of take or pay contracts in gas markets, the rule of the take-or-pay contracts, and that you pay the amount of pay looking at the price at the moment that you pay. So you are, I'm paying the amount exactly as it is indicated in the contracts, and not I'm looking to the price that I will pay in a future period when I will retire, when I make up, so taking back the raw material that I now not acquiring. In this sense, it's, for me, it's more evidence the view B, because the cost of raw material that I'm sustaining now is exactly the contract now, not the price that I forward or that I see in a future period.
Yeah, in the fact pattern submitted, I think the prices are fixed at the inception of the contract. They say what are the prices of the raw materials in for each future delivery that will happen, but this does not prevent, in our view, that the fact that the parties considered the time value of money when setting the prices.
Okay, but I have a different view. For me, what I have paid according to the contract in place is the cost. That's all. Then, if I'm lucky, probably I will I will take the additional amounts of gas in a future period, obtaining some benefits because the price has jumped up, and I have spent less because I have acquired it before, or I could be in the opposite situation, and so I have spent more amounts respect to the price that I would have in the period in which I take exactly the amount of the gas that is mine is in my entitlement. So, in my opinion, this issue should be analyzed looking also at two other aspects. The exactly indication that are inside the contract, so that can be different, because if the price is the present price, it's a cost, and so for me it's clear that it's view B, and can be a distinction, in my opinion, if there is a quoted market price or not.
Guido, I think you're next.
Yes, I agree there's diversity in practice and we need to deal with it, but I'm also with Luca's view, because I'm not, if I look at the standards as they are right now, I'm not looking at the revenue recognition standard, but at IS 37, IS 18, IS 16, IS 2, IS 38, they all tell you that only if you have a financial asset or liability, you discount or you account for the time value of money. You don't do that if you have a prepayment at the end of the day for the supplier. You have a liability to deliver raw material, not cash or a financial asset. And it's the same thing for the buyer side. So if we really would take this on, that cannot be an interpretation or something. We need to change a lot of standards, because from my point of view, what the standards are telling me right now is only for financial assets and liabilities you do account for the time value of money. And some of the examples, that, for instance, 38 paragraph IS 38 paragraph 70 says that you may recognize prepayments as an intangible asset. So it's an intangible asset. It's not a financial asset. IS 37 from the supplier side says, yes, you take into account the time value of money, but only if you have to pay cash. So if you look at emission rights, for instance, when we recognize liabilities for emission rights, we don't care when we have to make the payment, because we have to deliver emission rights and not cash. And I could go on like that, IS 16, 2, and so on, only they would not require accretion because it's not a financial asset or liability. So I'm a little bit concerned that this, that we can resolve this issue in the confines of the existing standards, because we have to rewrite half a dozen of standards if we really go this route. Now, the way I understand IS 18, that's my final point, is, and I'm not sure what the new paragraph in the new exposure draft is, but in the existing IS 18 paragraph 9 tells you revenue shall be measured at the fair value of the consideration received or receivable. You may read that differently, but the way I understand it is that revenue is measured at the time when you have made the delivery. So it doesn't matter whether you have made a prepayment or not. When the delivery takes place, you have made the prepayment before. That's what you are paying for the good. And again, looking at 18, I would not think that the solution that you are proposing here is within the standards that we have right now. So I don't think that we can solve that in the confines of the standards. That's a larger thing that if the board wants to take this on and says, yeah, we should do that also for non-financial assets and liabilities, that's fine, but then you would have to change a lot of standards.
Joanna?
Well, I'm a view A person, and I think that, like Guido, you're saying it's not in other standards. Paragraph 45 of IAS 37 says where the effect of the time value of money is material, the amount of a provision shall be the present value. Paragraph 23 of IAS 16 says the cost of an item, if payment is deferred beyond normal credit terms, the difference between cash price and the total payment is recognised as interest. I think it's pervasive, and it's just a concept that you take account of the time value of money. I mean, it would never have occurred to me not to consider the time value of money. So I am very definitely of the view A, because I don't believe that you can reflect economic circumstances if you don't take into the time back the time value of money. Now, Luca, you were, if you like, arguing with Patrick about, or discussing with Patrick, the actual facts and circumstances. I agree that not every time you necessarily pay something up front or whatever, it necessarily includes a time value of money. But I would argue that my initial reaction would be, well, why doesn't it? Because there is no such thing as a free lunch. You can't pay in a, you know, why would you give someone some money today, the same amount? And so to me, it's the facts and circumstances, but you would need to consider, first of all, is there a time value of money? And if there is, you should reflect that. But you're paying the money. You paid the money today. I mean, that's what IAS 16 is. You pay the, you know, so, so I mean, I just really struggle to understand where Luca and Guido are coming from. So if you like, it's just a fundamental different view. Having said that, and being a view A, I do wonder, I understand what you're saying about that we actually need to do it. I mean, I would, and I guess perhaps before I heard those two, argue that particularly if revenue is going to have the bits that you've got in there in your paragraph 34, to me that absolutely clarifies it, and there should be no need for us to do anything because it makes it even clearer than it currently is. But maybe we do need to do something, and therefore I do support you doing it with the same time frame if it is actually going to change practice. But it scares me that it's going to change practice.
Okay, I've got Scott next.
No, I'm also view A in terms of what I think the better answer is. I don't think current practice is view A. I think that would be the exception rather than the rule that somebody was actually doing it. So I do think we need to do something if we want view A to be the answer. I support the way the staff has proposed to handle this with the proviso that we ought not finalize this interpretation if we go that way until the revenue standard is finalized. Because I think if for some reason the revenue standard changes, the revenue project changes that those provisions regarding time value of money, then I think we would want to rethink what we're proposing. But as long as we come to an answer that is consistent with where the revenue standard is going on time value, I think the staff's proposal is the right way to go. But I don't think we could say that the current standards require it. I think you can go either way reading things now, and I think most don't do the time value because, frankly, it's easier to to not do it.
Okay, Andrew, you're next.
I was fine with view A, but I just had a question. Well, I think Scott's answered it. That assuming anything we do would be contingent on the finalisation of the revenue standard. And secondly, just to clarify what we would be doing. Are we talking about an interpretation, or are we amending some of the standards like IS2? I wasn't entirely clear what we were proposing to do. I mean, what is it we're going to do? Are we going to recommend changes to standard, or are we doing an interpretation?
Well, I had the idea to maybe amend IS2, so I don't think it should be an interpretation, but I was thinking about an annual improvement, but maybe...
Ooh, that's a bit tricky.
Yeah, as I hear here, maybe it's not the right way to do it. Maybe it's could be done as a consequential amendment of the revenue standard, because I think the idea behind that is to apply consistently whether you're in the purchaser's financial statements or the seller's financial statements, to apply consistently the concept of time value of money. So that's why it's very important, as Scott said, to wait for the final standard on revenue recognition, because I think we would apply the same principles or requirements that would be in the final standard, including maybe this practical expedient that is in the exposure draft.
I guess the reason we're asking that is because if we were going to do an interpretation, there's a lot of work we could be getting on with. If it's just a consequential amendment to the standard, then that's the easiest route, and there's not a lot to do.
Okay. Scott, I had you written down twice. Have you said everything you wanted to say for the moment? Kaz?
Yes. Well, I'm currently in a mixed view, but still leaning kind of toward view B rather than view A. Particularly, I'm concerned about purchasing side, booking interest income, and then including the inventory acquisition cost, which is, understand the financial elements somehow reflect into the financial statements. I can understand that, but in order to do so, I think we need to be very, very carefully restrict in a certain situation. So I think that we have to review very carefully, because in the relevance for the users, that's part of the information. But some case, like a supply or purchaser will borrowing whatever the loan or bank loan or whatever the capitalize, and then repayment. So in that situation, booking the interest income to offset the interest expense is a really relevant information. I think that is questions. So it may be the case, but I think it's if the prepayment is really based on the business to secure whatever material, that is a real intention. It's just simply financing element reflected into the financial statement is relevant information. I'm not sure. So I think we need to, I want to look at the kind of situation carefully and then review.
I have Ruth, Laurence, and then Luca.
Just to give a point about the revenue standard, it's the revenue standard, it's true, does only deal with deferred payments rather than payments in advance. And we're dealing with the opposite here. And the revenue ED now deals with both deferred and paid in advance. So I don't think we should try to tackle this within the confines of existing standards. I think the revenue ED gives us the hook. But again, to answer the question of how do we address this, I don't think we can do an interpretation. I think the individual standards would need to be amended because the standards we're talking about are quite old. and they, some of them imply that you take into account the time value of money, and some, as Guido says, some read them to imply that it's only if it's a financial asset. Others don't read it that way. So that's why I think aligning the changes we make with the final revenue standard, assuming it goes through the way it's proposed. But I think, and I'm not sure they can be consequential changes, I think they need to be specific changes to those standards to deal with the supplier side would need to be made.
Laurence?
I think I'm more in the VUA camp. And I support the comments that have been made about aligning with the final outcome with the revenue standard and so on. But I think if we conclude VUA, if the committee concludes VUA, the arguments to explain why such prepayment is not akin to reservation of capacity, capacity reservation, which would be more of an intangible asset nature, which obviously if it is so, you don't revalue, you don't, those arguments needs to, the explanations why it is not, it needs to be spelled out clearly. There has always been that tension. Why is this prepayment being made? Is it financing arrangement or is it reservation of capacity? And if it is reservation of capacity, then it's an intangible asset and you would not accrete interest. If it is a financing arrangement, you would accrete interest. And at the moment, I'm not sure I could see in the paper this analysis. That's the question then. Is the committee concluding that it can never be a reservation of capacity?
Are you referring to IFRIC 4 or a lease in the scope of IFRIC 4? Because in the fact pattern submitted, what is important is there are no assets, no PP&Es are specified in the contract between the purchaser and the supplier. And there are multiple purchasers of raw materials, so typically this contract would not fall in the scope of IFRIC 4 or in the scope of IS 17.
That I agree.
But your question is linked to this to the lease issue, or
it's not so much a lease. It's just perhaps is there in such types of contract the purchase of an intangible asset, which is securing your approvisionnement, your supplies.
Now, if there was an element of that, it would make sense that there was part of the cost, part of the price reflected that, but it would surely only be a portion of the price, whereas the rest of the price that you're paying is for the actual good itself. Plus there's the...
Let's go with Luca, and then Guido, and then I'm going to get to talk.
Just a comment to the point made by Joanna, that if I well understood, they say if you made the prepayment, you generally have in mind that there is a future price, and nowadays you have a discount because you are paying on spot the money. What I have seen in the take-or-pay contracts is not linked with this, is the other way around. You have an obligation to take some raw materials, gas, oil, whatever. If you do not take, you pay according to the price of today, that is the price that establishes the contracts, and you have the future possibility to make up, to take additional quantity in the future periods, and you will pay only some differences, because in general the pay are a percentage of the total amount, not the full amount. In this case, there is no intention to secure a future supply. is only a normal consequence of the contracts. And I think that my financial statement should reflect the real cost of material. It is the cost that I have spent now, and there is no item that I can see to be a financial element inside on this, because there is no consideration made for the fact that in the future could I be spending more, that the price could be upper or lower than the spot prices. I think that also the submission that has been presented indicated that it's a derivative that has not been recognized like a derivative due to the own use exception. But this means that you have in mind to fix a future price, and then you have some volatility inside connecting to the fact that in the future you could have a spot price in the future that is upper or lower than the spot price. So I will not go to a general analysis, because in my opinion there are very different and it should be carefully analyzed which are the characteristics of the contracts and which are the items inside the contracts.
Guido?
Just a quick reminder that if I think we cannot do it as an interpretation, I think we would also stop short by just saying, well, it's in the revenue recognition standard, maybe we have to look at IS2. I would like to ask the staff to go out and check what standards we need to change. Besides IS2, I think it's IS16, paragraph 23, that tells you what measurement of cost is. That is the cash price equivalent at recognition date. So I think we also need to change IS37, because it talks about cash outflows. Then you have the cash, time value of money. There will be a change in practice, because when people have to transfer raw material or anything else, as compared to cash, they will not discount. I mean, the example that I gave you is emission rights. So I would like to ask the staff to check what standards need to be changed in order to come up with a solution. I think only looking at the revenue recognition standard, that will increase diversity in practice.
Okay. As it happens, I've thought a little bit about present value over the years. I have been accused of having a present value hammer that I intended to use on anything possible. And so last night, as I thought about this, I found myself coming to view B. And I'll tell you why. There are a couple of things that you need, it seems to me, for present value to be relevant measurement attribute. In this kind of situation, the first thing you need is a closed loop. A closed loop. You need to know when it begins and when it ends. And this, I think, is part of the point that Luca and Laurence are raising. To an extent, the example that we have, like all examples, has to ignore some troublesome complexities. And one of them is that this amount that you paid might remain on account for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and even more. So that's first problem. I'm not convinced that we always have the closed loop that you need for an accreted present value to be relevant. Second thing, it seems to me, that I find troublesome is I don't know why we assume that 100 is the initial fair value. I could construct a situation where if I looked at this thing, unless I'm willing to say that it's an intangible for reservation of capacity, the initial fair value is 50. So what I ought to do is record a loss on day one and then accrete up to 100. That's what 39 would tell me to do. So then I come about back around to saying it seems to me that I can identify at least three possible answers to the question of what is this. The first is it's a financing. It has a beginning and an end. I gave you 100, I'm going to get 110 worth of value in the future. I think that's what the submission contemplated. Second thing, it's a derivative, as Lucas said. This is a price guarantee, a payment for a price guarantee. And 39 gives you a convenient out because it's, and here I get always use the wrong language. I think Monday I said normal sales and use, and in our literature it's own use, but it's the same exception. So you don't have to account for it like a derivative, but accreting interest to it isn't a representation of what it really is in that circumstance. Fair value would be a representation of what it really is. And if it's a capacity reservation, it's an intangible. And we don't accrete interest to intangibles. So my reservation, having thought about it a lot, is unless we were a lot more careful in specifying the issue, my concern is that we would have people out there, as Kaz said, accruing interest to things that looked at in isolation, we'd all say, no, don't accrue interest to that. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on the subject. I don't intend to sway the committee's decision, but that's my view on it. Ruth?
It's a derivative, then why are not all prepayments derivatives?
Because part of the specification of this one is sometimes it's a price guarantee. So it's a payment in advance to lock into a price. That's a derivative. Now, the fact that it's for a commodity that you get the exception. But
aren't all prepayments price guarantees?
No. This one could just be a prepayment.
But in effect, in substance, aren't they price guarantees?
No, not necessarily.
Because you're locking in your price now?
Sometimes.
You're locking in what you pay now. So aren't they all price guarantees?
No, I might just pay 100 against the ability to pay market value less 100 in the future. So that wouldn't be a price guarantee. Joanna and Andrew?
Wayne, I don't disagree with what some of these things that we pay in advance might be, which is where I was coming from in terms of the fact and circumstances. But the bit that is financing, to me, is a view A and should be dealt with. Now, if it is then too damn hard to separate them, well, like most things, you've got to make judgments. But I would also say your argument applies equally to the other side, which is the revenue bit. And I guess the question is, so that on the other side of this purchaser is the person who's receiving the revenue, and it's a question, and if you like, your issues are exactly the same for that, so should come up in the revenue standard. So I don't necessarily, I mean, if they're dealt with adequately there, to me, we can deal with them adequately on the other side, but not ignore them, obviously. But to me, it is very clear that we do need to do some, or we need to make it clear if we do this, that you've got to consider the facts and circumstances as to what these payments actually are.
Yeah, I think, and again, I haven't talked to the revenue team because I was just trying to pull my thoughts together last night. As I understand our revenue document, and Henry might beat me about the head and shoulders, it's a what we would loosely call a onesie-twosie approach. It accounts for a contract. And my concern is when we have one of these payments, as Lucas said, that is not self-contained in a closed unit. And so it might be a deposit that you make or the ability to do business until you decide to quit. And that's my concern, but I think that's consistent with what you were saying, Joanna. I think we'll give Pat the privilege of the floor.
Oh, I don't know how that got left.
Okay.
Sorry.
Didn't have anything to say. Andrew?
So I was just trying to understand your closed loop argument. So, I mean, when you're discounting a provision, under 37, or when you're discounting cash flows under some financial instruments, you don't know when the endpoint is. You keep adjusting to your best estimate. Is that different from this situation?
No. In 37, if you have an uncertain timing, then you have to do expected cash flows. There's no other way to do it. Or you just arbitrarily say, I'm going to discount to 5 years and then decide whether I need to go to six or whatever.
Yeah. Is that a closed loop?
If you do it on an expected cash flow basis, I think you have provided yourself the ability to say what the weighted average date is. But that would layer an additional complexity, certainly, on this one, because you'd have to say, I expect it to last for 4.7 years or whatever. Ruth?
I'm also querying the closed loop concept, because in the revenue ED, you continue to revise your estimates of revenue, and yet you would still, according to the ED, accrete interest. So I don't see a closed loop in the revenue standard. I'm not convinced that it's VB.
I think my point is, and I'm obviously not being very articulate in making it, to do this kind of thing, you have to have a beginning and an end. And you continuously revise your estimate of the total amount of revenue, but you have a contract that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And my concern is for the potential of these things to extend over multiple contracts. The situation that I was thinking of is the reservation of capacity, potentially, where you just pay 100, and it's not attributable to any particular sales contract. Guido?
2 points. One of the issues that you mentioned, Wayne, I didn't think about it, but I think that is, for me, the most important issue that you raised is, if you are the purchaser, you debit whatever, you credit cash because you make the prepayment and debit some kind of asset. I think it's not a financial asset, but if we accrete interest on this one, then why wouldn't we apply, and that's what you said, why wouldn't we look at, you know, we should recognize it at the beginning at fair value, because if it's a financial asset, I'm giving money to somebody without getting interest on it. So I would lower it. I would have a loss at the beginning. Does that make sense?
What 39 would require.
Right. And we are not in 39. I'm still convinced it's not 39. But you could also say, well, I will get some raw material in 2 years from now, and that is a different value as compared to a situation where I get the raw material in right now. So I would also probably recognize a loss, which at the end of the day would not change the revenue, because I would have the loss, the upfront loss, but then add interest to it. At the end of the day, it would be plus minus null, zero. We would have the same revenue that we would have with not accreting. So that's really the point that convinced me that we should look at it again. Why would you recognize something where you're giving cash to somebody, you're not getting any interest on it, why would you recognize it at the nominal amount of 100 of the cash that you transferred? I wouldn't do that. If we really would apply the time value of money in these situations, I would also look at it at the beginning and say, is that really the value of 100 at the beginning? It's less. Mm-hmm. So it would be, that's the other. Then the other point that I would like to make is, and I agree with Joanna on that, and maybe we should make the board aware that if the board includes something like is intended in the revenue recognition standard, that we will have this problem. Because I understand this argument that on one side, you look at the time value of money for the supplier, what do you do on the other side? So the board should be aware that if he introduces this specific part in the revenue recognition standard, we will have this problem.
It seems to me that, let me see if I can capture the sense, there is a subset of the possible transactions out there for which I think most of us would agree, if we can properly specify it, that accruing interest is the right answer, along with the initial recognition at fair value and all that. But we're not absolutely sure that we are confident. I'm not certain that confident that we've scoped that yet. There are other variables, other variations to this, and this is Joanna's look at all facts and circumstances thing, that raise other issues, and perhaps we need to more carefully specify those. That gets to Luca's concern and Lawrence's concern. The third is we want to be absolutely certain that either we're not creating any problems with revenue, or that if there are problems, these are things the board has already thought. So we want to make sure that we've got the deck clean with the revenue project. And you all need to be confident that we've done that. So that seems to me to be the work order for getting this back to you next time. Are there any other points that people would like the staff to do? I do not believe we're ready to make a decision today. Joanna?
I'm just wondering, and I'm thinking aloud, I'm not convinced, because when we do examples, sometimes we really struggle, but I wonder whether it would be worthwhile doing some really simple examples and almost doing the debits and credits from the purchaser's perspective and the seller's perspective. You know, even, I mean, I've just started here, we pay 100 now for receiving inventory in 12 months, and that's the purchaser, and the seller receives 100 now for, you know, and to perhaps, or at least, Patrick, you working through those, even if you don't present them to us, to see if you think that there are any issues there, and if you like, making them, you know, starting with a simple one and making them more and more complicated to see if there are any issues. Perhaps rather than bringing them to us, suggest that you think about that.
We could start from the example that is given.
Yes.
The paper.
Yeah, so you have got that. But do it from both sides.
There are both sides.
Okay. All right, okay. I looked at that and just gave it a tick, so I haven't re-looked at it. So, okay.
I think what you're asking is that it needs to be progressively complicated.
Yes, just progressively complicated to see what the impact is.
See, sorry. Stress-tested.
Yeah.
All right. Any other addendums or any objections to us taking that as the direction? Luca?
Just to put another small item in the picture, and coming back to the take-or-pay contracts in general, what I have seen in the financial statement is that the entities that pay requires the recognize the outflows of money and at the same time recognize an asset in its financial statement. And the same accounting treatment on the other way sides has been recognized by the seller who will receive the money but has a liability to furnish future additional quantity in the future. So in this case, the timing of the recognition of revenues has been postponed to the end of the story when exactly all the contract ends or effectively there is the recognition of the supply to among the parties. This is another item just to complete the pictures and probably could be useful in the sense to produce an additional example inside the additional analysis.
The staff has sufficient guidance. Okay. My apologies if that was a bomb-throwing exercise on my part. It wasn't intended that way. Just that kind of a favorite issue. Okay. Gary on agriculture.